Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here. Mic check.
This is Hamali.
This is Neha.
Guys, that was actually our mic check, but it was just so damn cute that we had to keep it in. Welcome to another episode of American Desis. My name is Arjun.
And I'm Akash.
We are very excited today to have on two members of SAHARA, which stands for the South Asian Helpline and Referral Agency.
Great memorization.
They didn't think I was going to remember that. we have on the show today Hamali Shah, who is a staff attorney at SAHARA, and we have Neha Dugal, who is the psychological assistant. Now, if you're asking what that means, SAHARA, South Asian Helpline and Referral Agency, SAHARA is an organization that works with domestic violence victims in the South
Survivors.
Asian
community.
Survivors.
Yeah, man, why don't you just let them tell it? I don't know why you talk so much right now.
There we go. I agree. Hamali, will you tell us about SAHARA? What it is?
So SAHARA started in 1991. We're celebrating 25 years providing services to the South Asian community this year. Big milestone.
That's huge.
The organization was started by 5 social workers, 2 doctors who were out in, you know, their professional fields, and they had a lot of interactions with South Asian individuals that needed services, but the services available were lacking. They didn't take into account their language needs or their cultural needs, so they decided to start an organization. Started on a kitchen table, somebody's garage, and then has grown to the office space that we have today over the last 25 years.
Now we're talking to you guys here in your office in Artesia.
Yes.
Or Cerritos, which one?
Artesia.
In Artesia. Has it always been in Artesia, this organization?
I think this office space we've been in for maybe 5 years, and there was one office prior to that. That was just a few years. But before that, it was out of people's homes, literally out of people's homes. There was no staff. It was all volunteers working together to help the community.
Well, what I'm asking is that Artesia is known to be a very, like, South Asian-heavy population. Mm-hmm. And it's mainly this is the main community or that you guys work within, or do you work with like different communities in Southern California?
We have people calling us from all over Southern California. So all the way from San Diego up to Fresno, Bakersfield, out to Riverside, San Bernardino, because there aren't a lot of service providers in the space in Southern California. We chose this location because, like you mentioned, this is the hub for the South Asian activity in Southern California. A lot of people come here for groceries and restaurants.
Right.
And I think that's part of the reason they chose this office space. But there are pockets of South Asian communities all over Southern California.
Now, this started in 1991 when you said that people recognized that there was not meeting particular service needs. Neha, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what are those specific service needs that were being
neglected? I got you.
I would say definitely there's a lot of stigma around the mental health services. So a lot of people, when they're struggling or they're dealing with their daily stress, we have different coping mechanisms that we learn from our families. However, there are ways to cope with it differently. And some of that information and that stigma does not allow families or individuals to reach out and get the support that is needed.
So how do you guys combat that? How do you guys combat, like, encouraging people to speak out? Because you're right. I mean, we had a guest on here, Neil Nanda, which was we were talking about he experienced, you know, domestic abuse from his father, you know, his father, and, like, his mother also experienced it. And, you know, he didn't tell anyone outside the family, like, there was, like, a South Asian community.
He didn't even tell the family.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't even tell, like, his grandma, like, you know what I mean? So how do you guys, do you guys see that that is happening a lot in the community? Yes. So how do we fight that?
I know at SAHARA we do a lot of outreach. So part of my job with the psychological assistant is doing organizational outreach. So reaching out to other community organizations that are providing mental health services. And if they reach or come across South Asians, to connect us if that is a need.
Right.
But we also do community outreach. So going to different faith-based organizations, so temples, gurdwaras, mosques. And informing them, sharing our information with them that we are here. We are a full service organization, so mental health is just one part of it.
Mm-hmm.
There is legal services. There is a lot of other services that we can share with them. So when they come for those services, we are able to give them more understanding of what mental health really means as well.
I think another thing that we do too is when we are doing outreach, we're trying to focus on something that's positive that people would want to talk about. So our outreach material or the way that we're interacting with people, we want to present to you some ideas about healthy communication or healthy relationships or how to deal with stressors in your life and not necessarily come in and target, well, we want to talk to you about domestic violence or this issue that's going on in your house, because that makes people shut down. They don't want to talk about it. And then another thing that we can do is talk about this like vast scope of services we have. Once somebody gets in the door and they get that comfort from us, then we start peeling back the layers. So they may come in and get help with Covered California for health insurance. And then while they're meeting with someone, we realize, okay, there's a lot more things that they want to talk about, and we can refer to other people in the agency. So one of the great things about Sahara is that there are so many professionals working together, providing different services. So if somebody comes to me with a legal question, I can refer them for mental health expertise or access to public benefits, or we have a shelter. If we realize, well, this person maybe needs a shelter, we can offer that to them. But they really need that comfort that they come in and they're asking for something, they start trusting us, and then they start opening up.
Let me ask you this. When did you start working with Sahara?
About 4.5 years ago.
And they have for you?
About 2 years.
2 years. Have you guys seen a difference in people's, that stigma being less now? Do you see it being easier for people to talk about the issues in the home, or is it still as much of a battle?
I don't think it's any easier. I haven't really seen any change. I think it's very hard to talk about. I think there's all these ideas in the culture too to talk, you know, keep issues in the home within the home. Don't reach out. Or, you know, Neha and I talked about this earlier, is that you don't realize what's happening in your home is different than what's happening in other people's homes necessarily. So you don't even know it's something that you need to talk about.
Wait, talk about that. You lost me there.
So I think it's this idea that some of these patterns of behavior just go from one generation to the next.
Like, you don't think it's abnormal.
You don't, because your baseline is just this environment you've grown up in, and maybe your parents had a similar environment, and so they don't think it's abnormal. And I think that's one of the things that we're trying to address, is cutting off that cycle.
Right.
Like opening their eyes, this is not the best way to communicate. You know, there's other tools, there's other ways we can address these problems.
Are younger people, because I always talk about just how different young kids seem, like 15, 16, 17, whatever. Are they different? It seems like in so many other ways, they're so much more open-minded. What about dealing with this?
That's a good question.
I ask great questions.
I don't know if there is a particular answer to that, but I can say they might be more aware of what this really means in comparison to somebody who didn't know what domestic abuse really meant or domestic violence really means.
Right.
So they are more aware, but are they able to reach out for services and you know, get the support that they know they need? I don't know. I think there's still a limitation to that. There's still a stigma to that.
Right.
But I don't know if they're really reaching out. But however, they are, yes, a slight bit more aware of what domestic abuse really means.
I guess what he's asking is, are their expectations when they enter relationships going to be different? And maybe we can't really, maybe that's a very speculative question, but I think that's kind of the question that we kind of come towards.
I think part of it is very similar, given that they're growing up in the same environment. Like, the parents are the ones that are giving them those values or setting an example of what a relationship would be like. So unless the teen is out there talking to friends or seeing something different, they don't really have a different expectation.
I guess with the internet and like globalizing, people get to expose to so much more. I guess what you're saying, and I think that's important to say, is that what we grow up in inside the home is still a massive influence.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you're like watching internet and like watching all that other stuff. If that's what you're seeing, experiencing physically around you day to day, we shouldn't diminish that influence that it has on people's development.
Mm-hmm. I think with the internet, one thing that we're seeing is that there's just so many, and this is very unfortunate, but there's more ways to like harass someone or abuse someone, like in cyberspace or cyber stalking or leaving angry Facebook messages. And that's something that's very new for us also to deal with. And how do you report that to the police where I think somebody's following me online or somebody's hacking my email? And there's no evidence, there's no documentation.
Well, let me ask you this. You guys were referred to us by Pallavi Dhawan, who is who was an attorney in LA and with the district attorney's office. I'm not even going to lie. I get this from watching TV, but like when people like refuse to press charges.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that happens a lot? That like people are refusing to press charges in these situations, even once you guys find out about it, that they like are refusing to press legal charges? Or is that another obstacle for you guys to face?
I think as long as I've been here, the number of people that have actually called the police and made a report is very small.
Really?
Yeah, so I think there's a huge fear of interacting with the police for immigrants in general. They just have this mistrust.
Right.
And maybe it's their experience back home with the police system, or they don't think the police are going to understand them if they have a language barrier. They don't know they can ask for a translator. Or the abuser speaks English, but the victim doesn't.
Right.
So then they're faced with a situation where they can't even tell their story to someone, or they have called the police. And I think people are getting more savvy kind of in this field, and it's unfortunate again, but they call the police and the police tell them, well, this is an argument you're having with husband and wife. We can't do anything. So the police can intervene if they see like physical abuse. But a lot of this is control or isolation or mental torture, verbal abuse, which they want to call the police because they want safety. They want it to stop. But the police are also limited in what they can do.
So I guess it's important. You guys are not affiliated with the police.
We're not. No, but we have worked with them. Yeah, or sometimes somebody will come here and they feel safe in this environment and the police will come here to interview them or take the statement, or we can provide translation. We've also spoken with the police to give them some sort of like cultural aspect so that they're aware when they go out, especially local police here. Yeah.
Yeah. Have they been receptive to that?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I would love to talk about the makeup of the community that you guys deal with a little specifically. Have a lot of the people that you're dealing with, are there a lot of American-born like families that you're dealing with as the community, or is it a lot of like immigrant communities coming from South Asia into this environment, or is it a mix? I'm being vague with my question. Yeah. I apologize. I don't know how to.
Is this more prevalent? I think what you're asking is this more prevalent with immigrants like straight from India moving here, or is it the same as kids who are born here, grow up here? Is it the percentage about the same?
I would say the only, right now we're seeing more immigrants, but the only reason for that is that the generation of people that were born in America are just kind of growing into the age where they are in these relationships.
So there's
more people that are getting married that were born in the United States. There's more people that are in relationships that could even experience this type of violence. So
right.
I think it's kind of like a numbers game at this point, but we are seeing more people that were born in the United States. And we see, and I was telling Neha this earlier, we see people kind of across the spectrum. We see people from all countries, all religions, like all education levels. We have professionals, we have people that maybe just had an elementary school education. So we're seeing people all across the board. And I think it's interesting because it breaks every stereotype.
Tell us about that. What do you mean when you say it breaks every stereotype?
So what happens to me sometimes when I'm telling people about the work that I do, when I'm telling a South Asian person, they kind of point their finger at another culture. So if I'm talking to a Gujarati person, they'll say, oh, well, that happens in the Punjabi community.
Okay.
Oh, or I'm talking to a Muslim person, they'll say that happens in the Hindu community. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing is that it happens across the board, across the spectrum. And maybe it's easy to point the finger at someone else and say that doesn't happen to our community, but it does. Like, we're seeing it here.
Well, I have this. It brings up this question of you mentioned that there are a lot of people not reporting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading a stat where between 25% to two-thirds of rape cases in America get reported, which, first of all, is an incredibly crazy range, 25%
to 67%.
That's wild. I mean, like, it seems like we are so ill-equipped at, like, understanding the breadth of this problem. And I'm wondering if you could speak to, like, how big a problem is this in our community?
we point to me.
Yeah.
It is pretty big because, I'll share my experience from the culture that I'm from Punjab, and my family immigrated to United States when I was 14 years old. So for me, being part of this environment where domestic violence or family violence is, you know, arguments, daily stressor, is actually really normal. So it took me a long time to get out of that and be like, oh, there's something different out there. So yes, it's quite prevalent, but it's also depends on the perspective of the person and where they are in their phase of their life. So if they're in a phase where they're like, okay, something feels wrong here, I need to figure out what it is, and they're ready to, you know, take the next steps and look at the new picture.
Allow me to interrupt you for a second. We should talk about what we're defining as abuse here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important thing. And we waited 16 minutes to ask a really important question. But let's talk. You are defining abuse not only physically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the definition of abuse that you guys work with?
So within abuse, there is physical abuse, there's emotional abuse, there is financial abuse, there's verbal abuse.
Spiritual abuse.
Spiritual abuse.
What is spiritual abuse?
Like preventing someone from practicing their beliefs, or forcing them to practice a certain belief. Or in some religions, that might be a certain attire that they don't want to necessarily follow. Just, limiting somebody's freedom, that control over some aspect of their life.
So a lot of this stuff that would be punishable, like by jail time or stuff, is physical,
mm-hmm.
right? So how do you counteract these which other very valid forms of, like, how do you that to me feels like couples therapy needs.
Yeah,
right?
What do you tell the victim to do? Do you tell them to leave, or do you tell them to try to work this out with this dude, get through to this person, male or female?
I ask them what they want to
right.
do.
Yeah. We don't tell them to do anything.
Because that's the biggest thing. If I can come and tell this person, you need to leave right now, they're like, okay, I'm not going to come back to this girl ever again.
Okay.
Right.
Because she wants me to leave something that's, you know, my life.
Right.
So it's not going to make sense. So I usually just ask them, okay, what is it that you want to do, and how can I support you? So I try to educate them about their rights and what the different spectrum of abuse is, and where, you know, I, from my observance and from my knowledge, they might be stuck, and then I can support them in certain ways. So I ask them, where are they? Where do they want to go? What is their plan? So we constantly emphasize safety. Even if they are in that relationship and they want to stay in that relationship, what is their safety? What do they want to do? If at all, you know, they get in this danger situation where now they don't know if they're going to be able to live or not, what can they do to protect themselves?
Isn't there a point at which you have to report it, like as a therapist?
For adults, no.
Interesting.
For adults, no. But if there are minors involved, yes, absolutely. I am a mandated reporter. I will have to report and protect the children. For adults, it's their choice. If they would like for us to help them report it, we absolutely can.
Can we talk about this?
I just want to add one more thing.
Please.
So most of the people that we're interacting with, they're coming out of this dynamic of power and control where somebody's telling them what they should do, or controlling their movements, or who they can interact with. So we're very aware of that. When they come to us, we really want them to tell us what their goals are, what they want, and then we can support them
to break
along
that cycle.
Journey. And we want to support them along that journey. We don't want to have another power dynamic where we're telling them what they want to do. And what's interesting for me is that sometimes that's the first time somebody's been asked. Like, what is your plan?
Right.
What is your goal? What do you want to do?
It's almost like the first step in empowering them.
Yes. Exactly.
In that way.
Because sometimes they just kind of throw it back at all. Well, what do you think I should do? Well,
right.
But that's not what I think is really not important. It's what you want to do, what your goal is, and then what tools can I give you, what information can I give you to guide you in that process of achieving whatever goal it is that you
that
have.
Takes a lot of patience. Because I would just be like, leave. What are we doing?
Yeah. And honestly, I'm saying that in my head a lot.
Yes.
Like, in my head, it's going on.
See, Arjun just rolled his eyes at me all judgmental. He'd be judging for no reason.
How did that?
That's what everybody would be like, what'd you leave? What are you talking about? What I should do? Leave.
Yeah.
But then you got to have a lot of patience to be like, what do you want to do?
Right. And it's the first question I ask everyone is like, what is your goal? And sometimes they have no idea. They don't even know where to begin with that question.
And then to follow up on that, I just say, okay, well, then what do you want to talk about? So keep it open-ended and non-judgmental to allow them the space that even if it's uncomfortable, it is their space.
As a therapist, I'm sure you went through a lot of training for this. Did you have to go through a lot, Himali, as an attorney of like, this is how you deal with this?
So what California requires is a 40-hour training to work with people in the domestic violence like arena to work in an organization like this.
That's it?
A week? So 40 hours of training, and that's it. And you get a certificate.
To become a domestic violence advocate.
Right. Okay. So that's the training that I have specific to the domestic violence space. Other than that, it's just experience working in the field.
I think every person should have to go through 40 hours.
What we're talking about seems like we're cutting at like just really strong cultural norms that have to do with, you know, a patriarchal society versus coming into a more egalitarian society. I want to ask this, and it might not be cut at it in whatever way you want to. Physical abuse feels more dramatic in my mind, but the other abuses that you're talking about are just as dramatic, true or false?
Define dramatic. I mean, it really depends what dramatic really means. I mean, if I'm saying...
More harmful.
Traumatic?
Traumatic, maybe traumatic. More harmful.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yes, it is just as traumatic, or I would say even more so, because physically, eventually, you can heal and move forward. But the emotional that stays within you. So sometimes I have participants who are kind of like, well, he used to say I'm fat, so now I'm concerned with my body image and I'm constantly taking care of my body and focused on that.
Right.
It affects them throughout, and that's the emotional part of it.
Right.
Because there's a second voice that you're constantly hearing that it's has been part
affecting
of for
your life.
Years.
Right.
And with the emotional trauma too, if you have physical pain, you can go to a doctor.
Yeah.
They can fix it. They can, you know, give you medication. They can stitch up a wound, something like that. But with the emotional, it's a lot more work, I think, for them to seek out services or kind of process through everything that they went through.
As someone who's in therapy, isn't it only the matter of allowing yourself the choice to do it?
Of course. But because of the stigmas associated with mental health or associated with this kind of behavior in general, to take that step to talk to somebody about it and realize that you want to get to the other side and make that kind of courageous leap, I think is very difficult for people. Coming to us, I think, is sometimes harder than whatever is going on at home. Mm-hmm. Just even coming to us where we're...
Because of the shame? Because of the stigma?
Just
the stigma
asking for help. For help. Talking to somebody about this. I think that's a big deal for people just coming to us. We're not reporting unless there's child abuse, of course. You know, we're not judging people. We talk about different types of domestic violence, but when they come to us, we're not saying, oh, you're experiencing this type. Like, you know, there's no checklist that we're going through. We're just letting people tell their story.
You're creating space.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So this is a question. What can we do as a community to be better about this? Whether it's... What are not only, obviously telling everyone that's doing this shit, stop. I mean, that's the obvious thing. But how do we as a community encourage break? That seems like the stigma is really a big problem within the community. How do we address that?
Open the non-judgmental space.
What does that mean?
That means don't lock your door when somebody comes to you and says, hey, I'm experiencing this. Even if you can't do anything, be there to listen and ask them how you can support them. That's the biggest thing you can do, because that way you're validating that, oh, they are experiencing something in pain and they might need the extra support that they need. That way you're not judging them and they're not running away because of the shame and the guilt or the blame. A lot of times survivors... are fearful that, oh, what is the society going to look at? I'm supposed to take care of my family. So we were talking about earlier about making the choice. Who has been making the choice so far for you is what makes a difference. And that's why it's harder to make the choice now, because so far your family has been telling you what to do. your family has been making the choice for you. Then you get married, and it might be your spouse or in-laws who might have helped you make the choices or approved your choices. So now you're at a point, being a survivor, you have to make your own choices, and that's not easy because you're starting from zero and like, how do I make my choice? How do I know what's good for me? So basically providing that support and letting them know that they have these choices, when they're ready, they can make them.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but you keep bringing it back to like creating space for like, how do we actively, like how do I, someone that's not experienced domestic abuse and not experiencing, I'm not in this situation at all, how do I let people know? How can I be a part of the solution? You know what I'm saying? How can I say, how can I let somebody know that I am a non-judgmental space? Because I think that's part of the thing, is that people don't know where they are safe to talk with, mm-hmm. other than like organizations like this, obviously, because you're out there saying, like, I'm a safe space to spot. Should mm-hmm. I, like, start just actively saying that out loud to people?
As a man, I'm going to be honest, as a man, I think our, like, gut, what we're raised to do is, like, go beat up that person. Go beat up that dude. Like, abuse the abuser. That's what you
that's
see in movies and stuff.
The cycle of violence just continuing.
I knew it wasn't honestly a good idea. That's why I'm saying yeah. that's what
not
we...
Not at all relevant to what I was saying.
Yeah, that's the only thing we know to... Like, that's the only thing we think to do as dudes. It's like, all right, you see a guy...
That's not what I think to do. I actually agree that, like, I mean, about creating space. I mean, that's what we do on the podcast.
You see a guy and a girl on the street, the guy's being, but you're going to go create the space? That's what you're like... That's no. your gut reaction is, you no, know no, what no, I need to do?
But, no.
Create
but
a space.
I think that's important, is that if you see it happening, that you say something or you step in or you mm-hmm. interrupt. People see it happening and they walk away, or they're like, that's not my issue, I don't want to get involved, that looks messy.
I've endangered my life a couple times.
This is hilarious that as a community that's so intrusive mm-hmm. in every other way, this is the space that we stop being intrusive.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's easier for people. They don't want to get involved, they don't want to have to pick sides. I just think it's easier to not be involved or kind of turn a blind eye, or maybe that's happening in my house too, and I don't want to admit that, and so I'm just not going to address it. I'm not.
It's a hard conversation to have.
Extremely.
A lot of times what happens is the person who's listening may not know how to react. The emotions that they might feel, sometimes it's hard to express that. So yeah. I think that it really makes a difference to... So to answer your question, Arjun, is when somebody comes to you to talk, you know, they're mentioning about, oh, daily stress in life or their relationship, listen and let them know. Ask them, is there any way you can support them? So even just that one question can make right. a huge difference. The answer might be no, thank you for listening.
Right.
That might be it. But next time they need the help, who are they going to go to? The person who asked if they can support. They're not going to go to somebody who's like, okay.
And I think it's okay to kind of know your limitation, too. Yeah. This is what I can do and not do. But if you know about organizations like Sahara, there's a whole network of organizations across the country working with South Asian individuals. We're doing it here in Southern California, but refer someone or take them. Like, can I give you a ride? Mm-hmm. Can I go with you mm-hmm. to talk to someone that may be able to give you more information or answer
but I think
these questions?
This is what I'm hearing, and this is the point that I was trying to, like, kind of make with that question, is that it's not that difficult.
It's not
that difficult. This is a problem that we can very, like, it's not simple, but we can, there are steps that are not, like, mm-hmm. like just asking somebody, how can I support you, is not that taxing. Mm-hmm. It's not.
But it's a change, but and people are just hesitant to change
sure,
what they're used to.
Sure, but I think that people are easier to make change if they know it's like, oh, I don't have to change the world. It's like, no, let me just take this small step, and then this small step will lead to a change. I mean, I think that that's what people understand. You know, I mean, this is kind of irreverent, but there was that. I saw this hilarious commercial about this guy that was like, saw something about the rainforest, and then he like, they quit his job, and he like went over and he like tried to like save the rainforest single-handedly. And they're like, nah, all you have to do is like, this is, look for products that have like a frog on it, mm-hmm. and that's products that are like actually avoiding using the rainforest or whatever, supporting the. And it's like, oh wow, I can do that. Mm-hmm. I can take small steps to like make a difference. And so I think hearing the small steps that people can take actually will allow that, like, oh, okay, you know what, I can do that.
And have a conversation with your family. I think mm-hmm. that's a small step. It's a hard step,
right.
but talk about it so that it stops with our generation. It doesn't continue to future generations. We're setting a better example. we're allowing this conversation to happen, even though it's hard. Because I think that's something that just doesn't happen. People don't talk about
let's
it.
Let's give our listeners an example. Like, how would you start that conversation?
For me, when I started going to therapy is when I first brought it to my mom. I was like, okay, mom, this is what I'm learning. I think maybe we all should go for that support.
Right.
And that's how I brought it up. But she shut it down. That was shut down.
Yeah. But what I hear, though, is you started from a space of, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm experiencing.
Take responsibility for your own feelings. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if it's like, oh, my God, I can't talk about it. Well, I don't feel comfortable talking about it. It's okay to say that, but you have to own what it is that you're feeling.
So it's and we talk about vulnerability on this podcast all the time. But it sounds like by starting, like by allowing your vulnerability, you're giving permission to those around you to allow theirs.
Yes.
Ooh. I like that.
Well done.
You had a question.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. Number one, in your experience, does this seem more prevalent in the South Asian community relative to the rest of America?
I think it's prevalent everywhere. In every culture, every religion.
Income level, whatever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are cultural aspects that transfer across other communities. Yeah. And some that are unique to the South Asian community. Probably.
What are the ones that are unique you find? I mean, besides the language barrier, because that's an obvious one. Are there other
things? It's hard to answer that because I don't know a lot about other cultures given my background.
Fair enough.
But
I think
one thing that we see or that I experience a lot is this idea the community is small. People like to talk about stuff that's going on. Like you said, we're so involved in each other's lives. And this
gossip
fear.
Gossip. Yeah. Uncles and aunties be gossiping.
Yes.
Aunties and uncles
the fear. Like the shame. Do. I'm concerned about what people are going to say about my parents or what people are going to say about me. And they're just looking at this one label like I had to leave my house or I'm getting a divorce or my parents don't or my kids are not growing up in a house with two parents. But people need to realize that there's another side to every story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and having that shame aspect or that blame aspect makes people so fearful to take a step to kind of change the norm, that paradigm.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen cases where a spouse was abusive. The person who was getting abused got a divorce, and then they still got judged. Everyone knew. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a secret that there was abuse. Everyone knew, and they were still like, well. Pfft.
So they were judging.
Yeah, what a quitter.
Yeah, you should have toughed it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? Why is it there's so much victim shaming?
Let's ask the therapist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good idea.
Why? There is no answer to that. Why is something that we've learned throughout our society that, you know, somebody at some point said, oh, they are doing that and put that person to shame and everybody might have followed it. That's the
So it's almost just like a habitual response is what you're saying.
Pretty much.
Because change is difficult.
Yes.
Right. It's comfortable. Breaking that paradigm is difficult.
You think we're on our way to breaking that paradigm?
I think we're trying. I mean, I think we're taking steps. We're doing a lot of this positive kind of prevention education. What tools can we give you to deal with stress? Or what does a healthy relationship look like? How can you communicate better? And that's kind of trying to attack those like norms and the paradigms that are there already.
And it's important to not label it. Let's not label it, oh my God, they're depressed. That's the label. Because if you share with somebody, oh, you know, I think you're depressed, they're going to be like, okay, no, thanks, I'm out.
Right.
Instead of saying, okay, what are the concerns? What are you dealing? What kind of stress are you, you know, dealing with in daily life? And then they can share the stress instead of being labeled, oh my God, something's wrong with me.
Right.
In comparison to, oh, this is what's happening in my environment.
That's a big thing in therapy, right? You let people reach their own conclusions?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. And to focus on the behavior, not the person, because it's not the person that's bad. It might be a behavior that they're experiencing or engaging in or have been a survival of that might be negative, not necessarily the person.
You guys are in the midst of a campaign, right? Or in the midst of a... It's February and we're
it's
in the midst...
It's February.
We're in the midst of... You said teen dating violence... No more... What?
It's terrible.
Awareness month. Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month is February.
Right.
So what
is that?
It is exactly what it sounds like.
No. I mean, it's a lot of words. You can figure out what it is.
They put
the whole summary in the acronym.
I think it's just this idea that we can break the cycle. We can have healthy relationships and good communication. And to try to identify that in your own relationships and how to break out from bad situations, and really start with teens when they start these relationships, start the interpersonal relationships and things like that.
Well, I imagine the teens right now are facing situations that we would not imagine before, mm-hmm. Like with the internet, with smartphones, with pictures. I mean, mm-hmm. sexting must be a new space, like you were talking about, for a lot of different sort of abuse and harassment to come.
Social media harassment.
Oh my God! Yeah. Are you guys seeing that popping up in the community? Are you seeing that as something you guys have to start dealing with?
Yes. We actually do have our youth program, which is a summer internship program where we do extensive just discussion and education about what does it mean to have a healthy relationship. And now we are kind of changing it into how cultural aspect plays a big role in that, and how race or community makes a big difference, and talking about all the different factors that contribute to the perception that sometimes we hold. And once we have that, then there we have the planning basically is for them to create a PSA, bringing awareness about, whatever it is that they want to specify in that. So in the past, we have had focused on domestic abuse and different ways that these students have been able to.
Is it domestic abuse or domestic violence? Because we talked earlier about how there's a shift to the word violence.
And that shift is happening here.
There's a shift to the word abuse?
Yes.
But it's Teen Domestic Violence Awareness Month?
Yes. Yeah.
And they just thought of this in 2016. February is going to be Teen Domestic Violence.
No, this has been going on for years.
They're not going to change that, though, because they're too sold on that acronym.
I think as clinician, as we begin to make the change within ourselves, that's when the whole full-on month change will change itself. Right. The title will change.
Why is there a shift? What's the shift about?
I don't know. I have no knowledge.
So from domestic violence to domestic abuse.
I think violence, actually, what you spoke about earlier, that there's this perception that domestic violence is physical.
Oh.
So maybe using the word abuse is so much more encompassing.
Right.
You can be abused in so many different ways.
Which is true.
Because people don't necessarily think about mental violence or verbal violence. So
That brings me to my next question. So we think about abuse, we think about physical. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe because we think it's physical, we always think it's a man doing it to a woman.
Yes.
But if there's psychological abuse and all these other types of abuse, what do you guys tell to men who might be going through abuse that's not necessarily physical but psychological, whatever?
It could also be physical that the man's going through.
Could be.
So, but that is less.
I think we got to break all the stereotypes and the gender roles. Yeah. It's happening across the board. But yeah, you're right. It's less
reported.
For men.
It's less reported for men. We don't know if it's less happening, but it's actually less reported for sure.
That's an additional hurdle for somebody.
But what does a man do? Yeah, because as a man.
But it's an additional hurdle for someone to come out and say, I need help, because now they have this gender stereotype in their mind.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You think it's shame for a girl to say, my boyfriend is abusing me. For a man to walk in here and say, my girlfriend is abusive, that's a lot of, like, you got to really overcome a lot to say, hey, my girlfriend beats me up.
Or even my girlfriend is making me feel shame about my body or the way that, like, whatever, like any sort of emotional abuse that may come up or in a lot of ways that it happens. What was your question?
Yeah, so what do you say to men who might be going through that? Like, how do you overcome that?
I think it comes back down to that same idea of not being judgmental. We don't want them to come in and have this feeling that we also believe that stereotype, that this happens less to men, or that they have a gender role that they're not fulfilling or something like that in a relationship. We just want to be as non-judgmental, give them that space.
It's time for us to just really, like, hammer down the truth that we all deserve better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that we all deserve to be treated with kindness and with compassion, and especially in our homes that are supposed to be the bastion of safety. Like, that is what is required. Like, that needs to be the baseline that we all expect. And I think it's important that during this month of Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, we start really, like, hammering it down at this point. Like, what you deserve and what you expect from a relationship, because then as you progress in life, that is what you will look for and allow.
Just to touch on that a little bit, there is this campaign that you mentioned, the No More campaign. And I think that's a way to kind of verbalize that in such a simple way. Like, right. no more am I going to be in bad relationships or unhealthy communication, or, you know, I deserve all these great things.
Where do you draw the line? I don't even know if I have a specific where I'm going with this, but just a question I have. Where do you draw the line between domestic or between abuse and just an unhealthy relationship? Is an unhealthy relationship pretty much always abuse? Because if a girl was manipulative with me or whatever, I would just be like, I wouldn't think I was being abused. I'd be like, well, she just was a bad girlfriend. She wasn't a good person. I'm out. I wouldn't think I got abused.
Mm-hmm. We're not defining the abuse. Yeah. It's really up to the person that's coming in. Mm-hmm. If they need help with whatever is going on in the relationship, we're going to give them that help.
Yeah, I know.
But there's degrees of abuse. So maybe what, like, being in something unhealthy is probably a degree of abuse.
Yeah, because that was what my mind was thinking.
And I think that we actually, sorry to interrupt, but I think that that's an important thing that you're saying, is that we need to open up what the mm-hmm. definition of abuse means. And maybe we need to confront the fact that abuse is far more prevalent than we give it credit for. Mm-hmm. And maybe because we want to just push it to the side so that we don't have to deal with it. Because I can understand that impulse, because, like, then it's just, like you said earlier, it makes life easier, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But maybe what you're saying is really important.
Yeah, I wasn't even necessarily saying we should classify all of it as abuse, but just any unhealthy relationship. If you don't want to call it abuse, fine, but to get out of it or do whatever you need to do to take steps.
Or there's room for improvement.
Yeah, yeah, to make steps, you make it a healthy relationship.
Or that.
Akash goes a lot to black or white.
Yeah.
He's very black or white. Yeah. With
everything
stuff.
Here is gray.
Right.
Or brown.
Everything
brown.
Here is brown. Brown. That's exactly what I was going to say. Damn it. I was having a dramatic pause.
Well, we're running out of time. We want to thank you guys for being on this show. Is there stuff that you want to say to the audience that may be listening to our show right now? Is there anything that you want to say?
Go for it, Himali.
I feel like we
donate
said a lot.
Money. Anything?
Yeah, go to our website. We have a Facebook page. I know Neha mentioned the PSAs that the youth work on. We usually post, like, there's YouTube videos and things like that. So we're trying to use social media in a positive way. Go to our Facebook page.
What is the Facebook page, Sahara?
Good luck with that.
Sahara.org.
Sahara.org. Yeah. And that is, and Sahara.org is the
Sahara.org.
website. Sahara.org.org is the website.
Guys, listen, guys, we got to honestly work on the way we name things. There's a lot of long acronyms
yes.
and a lot of
yes, our,
redundant
the
website names.
The founders of the organization were really into acronyms, so which is why Sahara is the South Asian Helpline Referral Agency, but they chose the word Sahara because it means support, and that's what that's what we want to do in the space, is we want to support people through whatever journey, whatever their goals are, achieve those in the best way that we can.
Well, I will say this, guys. Really, I think be on the lookout for this. Let's all take this on in a way for that we can improve the community, because it's on all of us. It's not just on the people that are dealing with the situation. It's on all of us to create a safer space for the community, to rip down these stigmas. Let's be better. We're going to come back next week with another dope episode. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple days.
God bless.